Hi, friends. Welcome to Bayou de Beltway. I'm your host, Pearson Cross. Today, we are joined by a distinguished professor, Jason Malloy, is professor and Kelly Saloom Endowed Chair in Political Science at the University of Louisiana in Lafayette. He's the author of three books and numerous papers. His most recent book is Smarter Ballots, Electoral Realism and Reform. And we're going to talk this morning about primaries and about different kinds of voting methods. Welcome to the show.
Thanks. Glad to be here.
Most people agree that the Democratic primaries are, at least until Super Tuesday, were a mess. They said the same thing about the 2016 Democratic and Republican primaries, along with the usual criticisms that are made of those primaries. For example, why should we care what the people in Iowa or New Hampshire think? We live in Louisiana. Both parties seem to be susceptible to a number of influences that are quite unusual, perhaps a celebrity outside it, perhaps somebody with lots of money. A recent Washington Post article mentioned a number of ways to make elections better in the United States, and we're going to here today to talk about some of those, but of course to talk about one in particular, and that is called ranked choice voting.
Pearson, I'd like to jump in and say I think the Democratic primaries are still a mess, and precisely because there are only two candidates. We've had we had four states vote, and then all but three or four dropped out, and then the third and fourth dropped out soon after that. And so, you know, the majority of Americans haven't yet weighed in, but somehow we've decided that it's got to be one of two. And I think that's a mess because Americans like choice. Having lots of choices is normally a good thing, and it's only because our electoral systems have some weird and not altogether desirable institutional rules that we get lured into the sense that too much choice is a bad thing when it comes to politics. I think ranked choice voting is one of several reforms that can kind of get us to a more normal view of having lots of choices being a good thing again.
Well, that was one of the things that's always seemed strange about the current system, which is that you have all these candidates, and, you know, they had like 17 candidates. But then they all kind of drop out before anyone's taken a vote. You know, so by the time people actually take a vote, you're down to 8 or 10, and then there's a vote, and then you're down to 4 or 5. And now, as you said, something like 3% of the electorate has voted. And we're down to two candidates.
I think the important thing to realize, and there's a decades of research on the human brain that help us out with this. Not my area of specialty, but it does overlap with concerns about electoral systems. Because when you're talking about 17, okay, that's a lot of choices for anything. 17 is a lot of choices. But there are nice numbers in between 17 and 2. And, you know, 4, 5, 6, 7 – that's a nice number, a nice range of choice that most people can manage without too much trouble. In our politics, because of our voting system, we get stuck on this idea that someone else please narrow it down to two and then let actual citizens have a say. It's a little bit odd.
Well, another thing that's odd is that we're letting actual citizens, to a certain extent, determine who the party's candidates are. Is this different in other places? Don't parties in other countries have a stronger influence over who is actually the party, the person put forward as the champion of that party?
Yeah, there's a really interesting field of study on candidate selection in democracies around the world. And, of course, a lot of different countries, dozens and dozens of countries hold competitive elections to select office holders. But then how do you decide which candidates get on the ballot in the first place? That varies quite a lot. Now, letting voters in on the candidate selection process is not necessarily in and of itself the problem. It all depends on the voting system, which is what I wrote my book about, to say that the conventional single mark ballot is part of the problem.
Well, let's talk about that for a second. Your book is titled Smarter Ballots, Electoral Realism. So what would be the realist elements that you would point to? Because that seems to indicate that, okay.
It's realism and reform. And there's a sort of a conventional view that there are reformers and then there are realists. And they're often at odds within the academic community, within political parties, you know, party activists arguing with one another over should we reform this or that. But what I try to do in the book is to say that smarter ballots, by which I mean multi-mark ballots, allowing the voter to make more than just a single X on the ballot paper, that is both reformist and realistic at the same time. It's not a zero-sum game. You can combine reformism with realism.
Well, if we have smarter ballots, do we have to have smarter voters?
No. That's why I put that in the book's title. The book's title was really an answer to a widespread assumption that we just need to educate voters. Voters need to inform themselves, and then everything will turn out okay. What I say is the single mark ballot is a dumb kind of ballot, and the power of dumb ballots is they can make even smart voters look dumb, depending on the circumstances of the election, the type of campaign, above all on the particular list of candidates that the voters confronted with. If you've got a dumb ballot that forces you to make an all or nothing choice, I've got to give 100% of my support to one of these and zero to all the others on the ballot paper. That's a very crude, dumb is kind of a rude word, but a rough or crude measure of the voter's judgment.
Perhaps, yeah.
So a smarter ballot lets the voter make more than one mark. Once you let the voter make more than one mark, they can show support for more than one candidate. On top of that, they can show different levels or degrees of support across more than one candidate. And that is smarter in the, you know, the most kind of neutral, basic sense of the word. You know, the word smart originally just means sharp, you know, gets to a point, can make fine distinctions, right?
Yeah, and I think you would argue that if you know, it is quite true perhaps that someone would like both Donald Trump and Ted Cruz. And to say all Ted Cruz or all Donald Trump would maybe not be expressing the way the person feels about the issue, right? But we force that person into that choice.
Yeah, the 2016 Republican presidential primaries were a great example of multiple candidates up for the contest. There's actually a whole chapter in my book devoted to analyzing that contest in retrospect. And what happened is you had one candidate, Donald Trump, who clearly had the largest core base, but that largest core base within the party was about 30% to 40%. The first dozen states that Donald Trump won in the Republican primaries in 2016 were won with 30% to 40% of Republican voters. Or to put it another way, 60% to 70% of Republican voters saying someone other than Trump. But because of our dumb ballot single mark voting system, lo and behold, the 30%, 35% leader gets declared the winner, and people who voted against that one person weren't able to say, well, I have a second preference and I have a third preference, and if my vote, you know, if my preferred candidate, say Ron Paul, who, lest we forget, was in, you know, one of those 17 all those years ago, 4 years ago.
Wow, I'd forgotten.
Yeah.
Was it Ron or Rand? I think it was Rand.
Yeah, I beg your pardon, Rand.
Rand, yeah.
Yeah, need to get my vowels right there. So the point is, I did this reanalysis. I thought, well, what if they're a ranked choice voting system? And just to clarify, I mean, I haven't really explained it yet, but in a ranking system, you can rank a first preference and then a second preference and then a third preference. And at whatever point where you see the candidates and you think, well, the rest of them I disapprove of, they're not worth any support, you just stop ranking. And then what happens is the weaker candidates, the ones who had the fewest first preferences, they get progressively eliminated and their voters get their second preference counted instead. The Rand Pauls and the Ben Carsons and the weaker candidates, they get eliminated. And then the Trumps, the Cruzes, the Rubios, and so on get new votes from the second and third preferences. And that's how you see – we don't really know ultimately if Trump – would have won the nomination if he'd been required to get a majority. But the ranking system allows it forces the winners to up their score from just their initial 30% or whatever, because they have to compete for second and third preferences.
So as I understand the system right now, so you cast a ballot. You go in and let's say there are 10 candidates on the ballot to make things simple, and you like five of them. And so you say, well, I like this guy the best or this woman the best, and that's number one. And then you rank them. You go, well, and then I'm going to vote for this one for number two, spot three, four, five. And then your votes go in, and just through a computer, which we're going to have to trust that it could do this.
It happens in Ireland. It happens in Australia. It's a going system in other countries, and it's used in some American cities. The basic process is, I mean, take your average a Democratic voter. Let's pick a candidate who's dropped out. Let's say Klobuchar. You know, Klobuchar is my favorite. But you go to when you're ranking, you think, in case Klobuchar doesn't make it with the electorate as a whole, in case I'm one of the few people that likes Klobuchar, well, I got a second preference. You know, what's a Klobuchar voter to do? Well, different Klobuchar voters will go different ways. Some will say, oh, Warren's my second. Others will say, well, Biden's my second. Others might say, and this seems hard to believe at first, but I've got data to show this. So Klobuchar voters will go for Sanders second. You know, people will be able to make their choices, and the counting system will sort out the votes of those eliminated candidates and sift them to the others.
Now, is this something that could still be done? I'm thinking about, could we add it to the current system of state by state, and how would that work as we progress through? So,
yeah, that's a good question. One of the ways that it's going to be used in a few states in the Democratic primary, and who knows, it might be too late to matter, but we'll see.
I think you're talking Alaska, Hawaii, Kansas,
yeah, the,
and
the
Wyoming.
Later primaries. Mm-hmm. What they're doing is they're taking this idea of a delegate threshold. You've got to, under Democratic Party rules, you need 15% of votes in a state to get more than zero delegates from that state. And they're using the idea of a delegate threshold to say anyone who's below 15% will be eliminated and their votes will be redistributed to see if they push someone else above 15%. And then once everyone's above 15%, they stop the count. And so then you've got, you know, the 1, 2, 3, 4, 5% candidates having their voters' second choices redistributed to the other candidates. So you get a more accurate view of where those minor candidate voters would go if they're eliminated. And some of your listeners may have heard about the caucus system where people are standing in a room, and if your candidate doesn't make the 15% threshold, people can try to say, well, Klobuchar supporter, come over here to the Biden camp over here. The ranked choice voting system is kind of a way to do that on paper without having to spend your evening at a caucus. You put your rankings in, and in case your first choice candidate doesn't score very well, your ballot doesn't get put away, it gets redistributed to one of the other candidates that you marked as your second preference.
And you also avoid getting coronavirus, you know, since you don't have to go to a caucus, you know.
Yeah. I have to say the beauty of the system, though, Pearson, is you don't have to force candidates out because they're splitting votes. Under a ranking system, vote splitting isn't a thing, because if your first choice candidate doesn't prove to be popular with the electorate as a whole, your vote's not wasted. It's redistributed.
Right. We are talking today with Dr. Jason Molloy, who has written a book called Smarter Ballots, Electoral Realism and Reform. And we're going to talk some more when we come back.
The strongest voices in the community, business, and government are those of KRVS listeners. Want to be heard? Get your message out by becoming a KRVS program sponsor. Call 337-482-1437.
I'm Ira Glass. A cop pulls a guy over because his van is swerving across the road.
Standing next to the man was a chimpanzee. The man said he was doing really well, and then he lost control of the van. And I'm like, lost control of the van? Like, at what point was the chimpanzee really in charge of this thing?
Some stories just don't fit under the daily news shows. This American Life.
Coming up Wednesday night at 7 here on KRVS.
Hi, friends. Welcome back to Bayou de Beltway. We're talking today with Dr. Jason Molloy, who is the Kelly Saloom Endowed Chair in Political Science at UL Lafayette. He's written a book called Smarter Ballots, Electoral Realism and Reform. It's not his first book, but his third book, so he's quite prolific. A question that I had and that we were discussing, the ranked choice voting system seems to advantage voters in the sense that it makes sure that their vote is not wasted. So if you don't like the person, if the person that you liked the most doesn't make it, essentially the person you like second most still has a chance. Mm-hmm. And so your vote gets spread in terms of popularity. Mm-hmm. But what about the parties? I mean, is there an advantage in this to the parties? Don't parties abhor choice, and wouldn't they much rather rush?
Giving voters more choices.
Yeah,
yes, we can see that in action in the Democratic Party right now. I'm glad you asked the question, though, because there is a perception that You know, the mainstream parties often come out against this kind of reform because it's confusing to voters. It's giving them too much choice. And often the subtext is, we as party elites aren't quite sure how to deal with this new system. But actually, there's a tremendous potential advantage that I think is not widely recognized inside the United States, although it is recognized in other places that use the system. And that is that parties can manage their internal fractures through ranked choice voting. And what I mean is, and you know, we're not just talking about some fictional la-la land where parties are internally fractured. We see this before our very eyes, whether with the Republicans in 2016 or with the Democrats this year. And what ranked choice voting allows you to do, and instead of cutting a backroom deal where the party elders get together and say, okay, we'd better decide who is the best candidate this year and make sure that all the donations and the funding go to them and really promote them. Instead of holding a closed party primary where we say, we'll let the 10% of loyal extremist party activists who will actually show up to a closed primary, we'll let them decide our nominee, and then who knows what kind of person will be our candidate. You can avoid both of those undesirable options while still letting the voters have their say. What ranked choice voting does is it allows the extremist candidates and the moderate candidates to live together for a while, because the moderate candidates can't tell the extremist candidates, you're potentially taking votes away from me and I'm more electable. The extremist candidates could always just say, I'm taking first choice votes away from you, but that's the voter's choice. If I get eliminated and you want to compete for my voter's second preferences, you're free to do that. And so ranked choice voting allows you to see, and you can see this publicly in the reported count from an RCV election, you can see where the weaker candidates' votes are distributed after they're eliminated. You know, some go to candidate A, some go to candidate B, and so on. And so it brings a kind of transparency to the process of negotiating those internal party fractures that the current system does not make available to us.
Yeah, I was looking at Facebook today, as I occasionally do, and I saw
– never.
Well, thank goodness. You shouldn't go there. It's a bad place. But I noticed that a very, very strong supporter of Bernie Sanders was just flaming Biden supporters, you know, and flaming that candidate. And I'm thinking, well, wait a minute. They're both in the Democratic Party. I mean, this is really a vicious internecine attack on a same party candidate. So ranked choice voting might kind of diminish that a bit, do you think?
Well, what it does is it says to Buttigieg and Klobuchar and Warren and Bloomberg, get out if you're tired of campaigning, but don't feel pressured by the other candidates. You know, Biden was saying to Buttigieg and Klobuchar, you're just taking votes for me and making Sanders look better than he actually is. But under ranked choice voting, Buttigieg and Klobuchar could have said, hey, I've got a distinct message. Hey, I happen to be under the age of 70. Hey, I've got something special to bring to this race. And my supporters, you can compete for the second preferences. I don't have to get out because my supporters' votes are still good if I don't perform very well. In other words, vote splitting is not a thing if you allow voters to rank their preferences. You know, vote splitting is a thing that's used to say, stop taking votes away from me, drop out of the race. Well, under ranked choice voting, I'm not taking votes away from you. I'm taking first preference votes. But if I drop out, my second preference could go to you if you've earned it from my voters.
What about using ranked choice vote in the general election? You know, both Donald Trump and Hillary Clinton got less than 50% of the vote in 12 states. Another example, a really cutting edge example, would be 2000 with Gore versus Bush.
A great example. There were states where the number of Buchanan votes was greater than Gore's margin of victory over Bush.
Right.
So basically, Oregon and New Mexico could have ended up going to Bush with ranked choice voting. Florida could have ended up going to Gore with ranked choice voting. We don't know how that would have turned out. What we do know is that the majority would have had its say in those states where someone actually won with less than 50%.
Even in ranked choice voting, am I right, you could still cast one vote and leave it blank?
Yes, it's perfectly okay.
I'm a diehard. It's got to
yes.
be.
Yes. If you like the simplicity of a single mark,
yeah,
make sure you mark your first preference for your favorite candidate. If you just think that everyone's a donkey except for one on the candidate list, you just mark your first preference. There's nothing stopping you from doing that.
That's interesting. Let's move on. Now, Louisiana already has kind of an interesting system here. We have the primary, the jungle primary.
Yes.
Some call it the nonpartisan primary. Others call it where all candidates run against each other. So how would that work with a ranked choice?
The short answer is beautifully. And I'm an admirer of any kind of blanket primary. Louisiana has one version. We like to call it the jumbo or the jungle primary. Two other states have subsequently adopted a version of the blanket primary. Those are Washington State in the Pacific Northwest and California. And in each case, in the Washington and California cases, for example, in California, they used to hold these closed primaries, and the Republican Party in California often would nominate an extreme far-right Republican that had no chance of winning a general election. But the blanket primary, like Louisiana has, as we Louisiana voters know, it allows more than one candidate per party to show up on that ballot. This works beautifully. You can do it in a single round with ranked choice voting instead of having two rounds. The way you do that is you eliminate the lowest ranked, the lowest candidates, fewest first preferences, eliminate them first. Their second preferences go to the upper candidates. And eventually, in a single counting process, without having a second election day, expensive as those often can be for local governments, without having that second election day, you get a result from the single round of voting.
Let's talk about that just for a second, because my mind is swirling now with the possibilities. So
indeed.
Imagine that you're going and it's a Louisiana primary, and you've got like maybe, I don't know, 6-8 serious candidates spread across the Republican and Democratic Party.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, you vote for, let's say you vote, you know, for the candidates within the Democratic Party that you like, and you rank those, and then someone else votes for the candidates within the Republican Party, and he or she likes those and ranks them. Well, okay, that's fine. But what about people who decide, well, you know, I like the candidate for my third choice, I like the candidate in the other party. I mean, this doesn't assume that you can do a straight. So you really could bounce back and forth between parties.
Oh, yeah. And that's the way it is currently, except you have to make only a single mark. But you can walk into the voting booth in Louisiana for the governor's race last fall, for example. You could be registered Democrat, Republican, Independent, whatever, and you can cast your ballot for Democrat, Republican, Independent, whomever. With ranked choice voting, if you're kind of in the middle of the political spectrum and you like some kinds of Republicans but not others, and you like some kinds of Democrats but not others, you can give your first choice for a centrist Republican, your second choice for a centrist Democrat, or vice versa. That's the meaning of a blanket primary, is the voter has freedom to range across all candidates from all parties.
So, for example, you could a voter could go into the primary, the governor primary, and cast number one vote for Edwards, second vote for Abraham, third vote for Rasponi.
That's true.
Right?
Yeah.
So, I mean, that would be their ranking system. They don't necessarily could.
And actually, 2015 is a particularly delicious example because of the vote splitting that actually occurred in the first round of voting. I'm talking about the three major Republican candidates that were on the ballot in 2015. For those listening at home, you will recall those were Angell, Vitter, and Darden. And those three Republicans were basically vying for the same pool of Republican voters, which, you know, most statewide races, that's a majority of the electorate. So it was kind of funny that a Democrat ended up being elected. But one of the contributing factors was the Republican who got his nose in front and got into the second round in 2015 was quite possibly the least electable of those three major Republican candidates. But what happened is that even though a majority of Republican voters did not want Vitter going to the second round, they split their votes. Remember I was talking about vote splitting? They split their votes between Darden and Angell. Neither Darden nor Angell had as many as Vitter, even though Vitter couldn't get a majority of his own party. Well, with ranked choice voting, Darden supporters rank Darden first and Angell second. Vitter never gets their vote. Angell supporters rank Angell first, Darden second, Vitter never sees their vote. And one of those two likely leapfrogs Vitter into second place going into the second round. So, you know, vote splitting is something that is real. It happens. It creates interesting outcomes, to put it diplomatically, and it's something that's happened to Louisiana in the recent past.
Yes. Yeah, so if you are a fan of Republican Party politics and you say, gee, I sure wish John Bel Edwards wasn't governor, you would look at that. In that election, Vitter, as I recall, got 23%, Angell got 20%, Darden got 15%.
Right. And, so, not all of the Angell and Darden voters were dead set against Vitter, but a good number of them were. And so, you know, we would have to I'm not issuing a retrospective prediction, which is sort of an oxymoron anyway. I'm just saying the possibility is that Vitter would not have been the leading Republican with a ranked choice system. And, you know, in response to your point about if you're a fan of Republican Party politics, it's really regardless of jurisdiction, if you're a fan of majority rule, ranked choice voting appeals to you. But I would also like to point out that majority rule for the short term is what RCV gives you. But minority groups in the electoral process are also empowered in the long term. And that's because of that thing I mentioned to you earlier. You don't have to be told to drop out because you're only a small chunk of the party and your supporters don't matter. You stay in and you demonstrate publicly through the official count, these are my supporters and this is where their second and third choices went. And that actually gives you more leverage in coalition building to kind of publicize and demonstrate the level of your support.
Once again, we are talking with Dr. Jason Malloy about voting, about ranked choice voting, and about making the ballot smarter, not less smart. What would be the effect on ranked choice voting on minorities, women, and outliers?
There have been some studies at the city level in the USA where there are about a dozen cities that elect their mayor and city council places through ranked choice voting. And there's some evidence that, unfortunately, or women candidates and candidates of color are often the first ones who are told, you're not needed in this particular
race.
You're
not competitive, yeah.
Drop out and make way for the more experienced person. Well, they don't have to do that. So more women, more candidates of color tend to show up on the ballots, and they get elected at a comparable rate. So their participation as candidates seems to be enhanced from the observational evidence we've seen so far. And I just point to the coalition building, demonstrating your force by keeping your candidate in the race, even though they may be a minor candidate, because their voters can use second and third preferences. You don't have to drop out. You can run in that single round election. The outcome will be known, but then the distribution of your support to other candidates once your first choices are exhausted, that will also be known.
We're coming to the last 20, 30 seconds of our broadcast. So tell me, culturally speaking, are we bound to the current system? Do you think there's any chance we could make this kind of change, or is it too drastic?
Well, there are movements afoot in red states, in blue states, and in between states. The state of Maine is one of those purple states. Utah is a red state. And there are some blue states like New York and Illinois and Minnesota that are also considering it. So it goes across the board.
Well, let's hope. It makes a lot of sense. We've been talking about ranked choice voting with Dr. Jason Malloy. He's got a recent book, Smarter Ballots, Electoral Realism and Reform. Thanks for coming to the show.
Thanks for having me.
Bayou to Beltway is copyrighted by KRVS for the private use of its audience. Any other use of any portion of this program without written consent of KRVS is prohibited. The views expressed on this program are those of the participants and do not necessarily reflect the views of KRVS, its officers, or members. To listen to a podcast of the interview we just heard, go to krvs.org.
We all make mistakes in life. Si tu avais manqué la dernière Franco Mix, c'est OK. Tu peux m'écouter this Thursday at 9 p.m. seulement sur KRVS 88.7 avec Drake Benoit LeBlanc. Et c'est formidable.
Well, everybody's heard about the bird.
Hi, this is Lee Klein, Peter, with an invite to join me for some music that stood the test of time from the 40s all the way up into the 70s. It's the music of the Old Gold Show coming up this Thursday at noontime on your public radio connection in Acadiana. That's 88.7, and also on the web at krvs.org. Lee Kleinpeter, Old Gold, coming up noon Thursdays on KRVS.
This is KRVS, 88.7 FM, Lafayette, Lake Charles.